Welcome to episode 9 of season 19 of the Growing Empire Show. Today, I am here with my co-host and my special guest, Hadar Orkibi. Hadar is a U.S. citizen now, full-time property investor and trader. He's invested in real estate for over 2 decades with a main focus on multifamily apartment buildings that have value-add upside potential. Hadar invests in multifamily, residential, and commercial, triple net leases, and pretty much any real estate, and is a regular participant and a guest in investing different U.S. real estate investing podcasts. Over the years, Hadar implemented different strategies, which include house flipping, subdivision, new construction, triple net leases, commercial real estate, joint ventures, and multifamily. Hadar enjoys working with both seasoned real estate investors and those new to real estate investing to reach their wealth, income, and portfolio goals through multifamily. Hadar loves real estate investing and the freedom it creates. So I'm super excited to get to talk to my guest, and I hope you enjoy the show. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
Welcome to the Growing Empires podcast, where it's our mission to help investors create wealth through real estate and secure financial freedom. And today we have an amazing show planned. I'm excited for today's episode. Joining me as my co-host is my good friend and colleague, Robert Musso. So Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Awesome. Well, Robert, why don't you jump in and just give a quick introduction about yourself and then introduce our guest.
Great to be here, Jennifer, on another episode. Thank you so much for having me as your co-host this season. For those of you who have heard me before, I'm now a full-time real estate professional after a long career in corporate America of 20 years in the hotel and hospitality space. And my mantra is using real estate as the bridge to living your best life. And my passions include my family, my faith, cooking, food, travel, and of course, investments. So very, very excited to share all these wonderful experiences with you and our guest this season.
All right. So let me introduce our guest, Hadar Orkibi. So Hadar has been a full-time property investor and trader, and he spent over 2 decades in the multifamily space. So I'm really excited to talk to you with Robert today, Hadar, and get your perspective on real estate investing and why you chose this path. So let's just jump right in with our first question. You know, you've been investing in real estate for over 2 decades. So what initially drew you to real estate and what was your first deal like?
Okay, so the first thing that drew me into real estate was the lifestyle by design that I thought I could reach through real estate, mainly having a passive income and building generational wealth through real estate. It's something that really attracted me. I'm an entrepreneurial spirit. I like to be very dynamic and making deals and having the freedom of having a lifestyle combined with making money was really the thing that was attracting me to real estate. So that was the actual attraction. It was kind of a dream of having money, but being able to combine business with pleasure through enjoying what you're doing. And that was the key element for me. My first ever deal was, let's put it this way. My first ever investment deal that was kind of, I was really in, was a house that I bought. I bought a house which was sitting on a quarter of an acre piece of land. And that was a land that was a high density land. And the strategy that I implemented, that was a house actually in New Zealand. So you guys know that I was born and raised in Israel, an American citizen as well, but I was actually spending the last 25 years in New Zealand, near Australia, the country near Australia, if somebody's wondering where it is. And I bought a house over there. I got into real estate. I was doing a lot of wholesaling in the beginning, and I managed to build enough capital to get into buying a house. So I bought this house on a quarter of an acre, and I rented it out. I got a discount of about 15% from the asking price, and I thought that it was a good deal. I had to put enough down payment to make the actual cash flow break even. So I thought that was a good deal. But in the end, I learned that I could do better.
Nice. So what did you do before you got into real estate? What was your career?
Well, back when I arrived in New Zealand, I was really working in the vineyard and orchards of Central Otago. Back then, in the early 2000, as a manual labor, picking fruit and thinning fruit trees and working in the vineyards. As a young immigrant to New Zealand in my late 20s. Prior to that, I was actually a real estate agent in Israel. Before I moved to New Zealand, I was working in real estate, mainly in rentals and in the suburbs of Tel Aviv. And before that, even that was around the mid 20s to late 20s. And then we go to the prior section of my life when I was working. I started working about the age of 14 with my older brother in the jewelry business. So he has a jewelry shop, and I was working after school with him in the jewelry shop in Tel Aviv, doing some goldsmith work, repairs and sales, and also got involved with assessing diamonds and working about kind of evaluating diamonds. I've done the course. So that was how I started. And that actual experience of working with my brother in the jewelry shop was a very important experience in my business life, because he's quite older than me. He's about 13 years older than me. And I learned a lot from him, specifically from negotiations and how to deal with people and how to sell. So selling, as you know, in any business, it's a very important part. And I learned that in an early age, from the 14 up to about my early to mid 20s.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know, a fascinating background. It's interesting. A lot of people in certain countries can't take moving town to town, let alone country to country. So I find it, you know, fascinating. As a first generation American myself, I haven't had the fortune of living anywhere else, although I've dreamed about living in Canada or Italy or Spain or Portugal. But, you know, I love hearing the stories, and I live vicariously through people like yourself. I think it's just absolutely wonderful. You know, this is one thing I don't think I realized, Hadar, having so many conversations with you in the past. So you moved to New Zealand. You've been there for so long. I know you invest in America now. But when did that first investment happen after you moved to New Zealand? Was it in New Zealand or was it in America?
It was in New Zealand. So I started as a wholesaler in New Zealand, basically getting properties under contract. Okay. And assigning the contracts for a fee. Gradually, I moved into doing double closing, you know, contemporaneous closing. And that allowed me, instead of collecting $5,000 to $10,000 checks for assignment fees, I was able to clip the margin in between my trading, which was buying a property, for example, for $200,000 and selling it for $230 or $240 or $250. That allowed me a bigger margin by doing actually closing on the deal and getting the margin in between my buy price and the sell price. And then I built enough capital that allowed me to start investing and buying my own single family housing. Back then, I did not know much about multiple income properties, what we're doing now. We're focusing on multifamily. And that's something that I wish I knew when I started, to focus on multiple income, to focus on yields, in opposed to focusing on that quarter of an acre house with the potential appreciation and development potential that had in the land. So those properties is basically like a land banking transaction that you wait for one day that you can develop it, or that it will go up in value because it has a higher density on the land. I didn't know that to accelerate my growth in investing and my journey towards financial independence, I actually need cash flow. So I didn't really know back then, you know, nearly 20 years ago, that I need to focus on yields and a cash flow producing asset. And that was around the year 2005, 2006. That was that first deal when I actually purchased a property, my first investment property in New Zealand.
Wow. So, and I know that you've not only done flips, but you've invested in triple net leases, you've done commercial real estate, you're doing multifamily. So when did you actually make the switch in your investing career to start focusing primarily on multifamily?
So So my understanding of investing in multifamily actually started, the idea started in New Zealand when I bought several houses, single family homes on a large lots of pieces of land that you could potentially have the upside in the land from the development potential. But those properties weren't cash flowing so great. And I got to the point that there weren't much value add either. The strategy was a strategy just that I learned from an Australian mentor through a book and through some videos back, you know, in the early 2000s, that is applied in big cities that it's a capital growth cities like Sydney, like Melbourne, Australia. In those markets, or even in Auckland, New Zealand, or Christchurch, where I bought these houses, in those markets, there's not a lot of multifamily stock available, and there is not a lot of cash flow because the price to rent ratio doesn't make sense. So I bought those houses, and suddenly I figured out that I was leverage locked. Basically, I had those properties; they weren't producing enough income for me to be able to grow the portfolio. The banks, the lenders didn't like that. So at that point, I sold a couple of those houses and I started focusing on multiple income properties in New Zealand, like triplex, quads, so on and so forth. And I've done that and from the mid to early to mid 2000 until about 2008, 2009, I started looking into the US because I learned from I saw online. I got to know Bigger Pockets and some friends from New Zealand starting buying houses in America. But my business in New Zealand was doing quite well with flipping, and I had quite a lot going on. And I also thought that multifamily in America it's for the big shots, you know, buying 20 unit, 30 unit, 40 unit. I really thought that it's something that perhaps I can't get into. So I had a limited belief while I was in New Zealand, although I was an American citizen, that I can't do it. So I put it on the back burner until about 2016. In 2016, about 2015-16, I noticed that the prices in New Zealand have appreciated so much that the median house price in Auckland, which is where I was buying mainly, the median house price reached to $1 million. So with $1 million median house price and a lot of restrictions from borrowing from the banks in New Zealand that are trying to cool the housing market, you really wouldn't get the biggest bang for your buck keep buying over there, because there are also restrictions on the loan to value that you can buy assets. You'll have to bring a very large down payment of about 35% to 40% of $1 million minimum, you know, kind of purchase price. It just doesn't make sense. So at that point, I felt that I need to go and start looking more seriously into the U.S. And I started taking some coaching in the U.S. around 2016-17 and starting to learn more about multifamily. And that was when I started buying smaller multifamily, triplex and a quad, and I built my portfolio from there.
Nice. So let's talk about analyzing multifamily properties. So when you're looking at a deal, what are some of the, specifically like a value add, right? So, because I think you're buying a lot of value add. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I'm focusing on value add deals. I like to have enough meat on the bone so we can add value and manufacture enough equity that would allow us to refinance the capital out once the property is fully stabilized, so we can take that finance, have the velocity of money, and put the money that we cash out refi into the next deal. And that's what I've been doing to grow my portfolio.
Okay, let's break that down a little bit. So when you're looking at a deal, you're analyzing a deal, right? What are some of the key factors that you're looking for in a deal to have you think, you know what, this is something worth moving forward with or trying to put under contract? You know, what are some of those key factors that you're looking for?
So there are many factors that are actually important. Some of them is the location. As you know, there are many factors that will determine if the deal is an interesting deal or not. But from a numbers point of view, I really want to have a deal that has enough upside so we can force appreciation, increase the income, and perhaps reduce the expenses to create a higher NOI, which the ultimate goal will be to have the property fully stabilized and refinance at least 70% of our capital out of the deal into the next deal once the property is fully stabilized and still have the property cash flowing. So that is the with preferably a minimum of an 8% cash on cash return moving forward. More often than not, it's even double digits return or an infinite return if you're able to cash out all your money out. That is the ultimate goal for me.
I believe you're in Iowa or Indiana, correct?
Arkansas and Tennessee. Yes.
Okay. Now, what attracted you to those particular states? I mean, I think I have an idea about Tennessee because of Marco, perhaps, and Jake and Gino, but I'm just curious to get your insight on that.
So, on a nutshell, I was not aware on Arkansas when I did my research. When I've done my market research, you know how we teach in MIH Mastermind, we teach our members to go and do a market research, make sure that they are the right, not only tenant and landlord rules, you want to have it as pro-landlord as you can, not like New York and California when it's very difficult to evict people who don't pay. So we're starting with states that really have friendly landlord rules. But we also want to have states that have a good price to rent ratio. So that was my first criteria. And when I did my market research, initially, I went to Jacksonville, Florida. I went to Salt Lake City and I went to Memphis, Tennessee, because I had some connections in those markets through other people who I met who invested over there. So I did a lot of networking. And when I was in Memphis, I went and I spent some time there. You know, you got to go and spend time in the markets when you're doing the market research. You have to network with people, do driving for dollars, kind of having a feel, understanding the locations and the areas and the demographics, the median incomes. And also a very important part was what kind of availability of stock of multifamily there is in the market. There is a lot of stock for multifamily? Are there bad pockets scattered around good areas? Or is it a defined area? Like, for example, in Little Rock, Arkansas, if you go south of the I-630, you're in the war zone. It's like the have and the have not. So for me, when I was in Memphis, I felt that the market was very big. I felt that not only it was very competitive, but it was very hard to have a good feel and understanding to the market, because block by block, you can have a different demographics and different areas. Like, it could be a very rough area, and then you have another block in the east that is good, and then further down east, it could be bad. And I met some people through bigger pockets who recommended me to check out different markets. And connected me to property managers in Memphis at that case. And through conversations and taking them for lunch, they told me, hey, you should check out Little Rock, Arkansas, which is only two and a half hours from Memphis. Check it out. It's under the radar kind of thing. So I did some research. And back then, Little Rock, Arkansas and the central Arkansas area was really under the radar. There's not a lot of interest in that market. So I went there. I drove around. I felt that it was very compact, very easy to understand. I managed to meet with property managers over there that I really liked, and they really. I built a good rapport with them, and I networked with some local investor. And I felt that it could be a good option for me, from a building a team point of view, but also from the market having opportunities that are still under the radar, and I can have kind of the first pick of the cherries, if you like.
Do you have boots on the ground there with a general partner? Do you have good property management there? How did that all come about?
In the beginning, I formed relationship with a good third party property management, and I also I spent a lot of time there. I was living in New Zealand for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, even a month, you know, to spend some time there, hang out with some new friends that I made, and network with brokers and lenders, get referrals from them for new brokers, for new lenders, and I built my own network. And I built my own network of subcontractors as well. And that's when I started. My first property there was a 4-unit, which I paid close to market value to. But the learning experience and the relationship building that happened through getting this property and renovating the property and using new contractors to build my team – was priceless, because that set me up for future opportunity and future dealings. It was really, really, really solid foundation for building my team around the first deal. And once I've done this, I was able to have a good building inspection, good property manager, and reliable people to work with. So they were my boots on the ground initially.
Yeah, no, that's key information. And a lot of people, I think they take it for granted. You know, they don't put enough value on boots on the ground and having those strong relationships in the market. And it goes even deeper. As Jennifer and I have had so much experience over the last 20 years within certain municipalities, it goes to being, you know, close with the local city and codes office, the zoning office, you know, your local fire chief, down to the business owners, contractors, you know, neighbors. So spending time in the market is very, very, very key. So it's great story. Now, do you have the vision and you know, the strategic plan to continuously invest in this market, or are you targeting anything new?
I'm strategically focusing on that market. This is the market when I have the strongest relationship with lenders. I know the market like the back of my hand. I know 99% of the assets in the market. I know them, and it's almost never happened that somebody is offering me a deal that I didn't consider in the past or know about or know what it was transaction before or anything like that. So I have such a strong team over there and market knowledge, and most importantly, relationship with not only contractors but also with lenders that allows us to be to have a competitive edge on other investors who are potentially beginners or potentially out of town that don't have this relationship that allows them to pick up heavy value add deals that the local lenders could trust us now that we can take them down and do a good job. That's something that it's priceless. And I'm in a position now that I'm pretty happy to wait for the good opportunity that will come in my market. I don't want to go through the process of building a whole new network and going through what I've been going through for the last nearly 10 years now, in you know, 7 to 10 years in that market. I'm kind of happy to just wait for the next opportunity and build upon the foundation, the strong foundation that we have there in that market.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
As an investor, we know it's important to stay on top of market trends and real estate opportunities that add value to your portfolio. We also know that having a trusted source of reliable information to help you stay a step ahead of other investors is critical to your success. If you're interested in having these types of resources, as well as access to me and my team, I invite you to join the Empire Investment Club, a free service that gives you an easier way to make sense of today's and tomorrow's real estate opportunities. As a member of the Empire Investment Club, you'll get access to relevant resources and investment-focused experiences such as live interactive webinars, market trend presentations, and investor socials designed to equip you with what you need to succeed. So whether you're an active investor, passive investor, a combination of both, or just starting out, the club is where you'll get what you need to build a portfolio you love. To join, just head over to jenniferdejesus.com, sign up, and we'll see you in the club, where everyone's on a journey to becoming a better investor.
So, Hadar, tell me about a huge win. What is your biggest success story? If you had to pick just one, what is it? And what happened in that deal?
My biggest success story in the States would be that I negotiated the deal. It was a direct-to-seller deal, 45 units. And I'd been negotiating it for about a year and a half, maybe 18 months.
Wow.
Off market, and I ended up purchasing the property for a very good price. I paid about $25,000 a door, 45 units in a great area. I bought it with the local community bank that I really built relationship with, and I got a good loan. It was the lender that was funding me the deal, so I wasn't really able to have too many options because it was my first large deal. It was 45 units, kind of value add. All of the numbers were on the back of an envelope, mom and pop owner. And he offered me a loan with higher interest rates of somewhere in the mid fives, you know, back in 2018 or 19, and 20 years amortization. So I bought this property. I increased the rent And after 1 year, I went from that lender into a second lender, which was the credit union, who offered me a lower rate and a higher amortization. So I got 25 years amortization with the 4.something% interest rate. That allowed me to refinance all my money out from the deal. So I put $400,000 into the deal. I was able to refinance that $400,000 out of the deal and invest in another property. But that was just the first refi, which happened after 12 months of adding enough values. The rents were about $400 to $420 when I bought it. After the first year, they reached to about $550 to $575. So that is significantly upside what we call loss to lease in the rent from the market. There was a lot of gap between what they were renting and what the market rent was. That's called loss to lease. So that was the first year. After the next 12 months, I was able to refinance another $500,000 by going from the credit union into Freddie Mac to, again, from 25-year amortization to 30-year amortization, and from 4.something% interest rate from the credit union to 3.6% with Freddie Mac. And that allowed me to refi that $500,000 while my monthly payments stayed almost the same. So in effect, I got my money back plus $500,000 and my cash flow stayed the same. And it's now fixed, that loan at 3.6%. It's fixed for 10 years. That really allowed me to grow. It really allowed me to have a non-recourse debt on my portfolio, which is very good for your balance sheet because this debt is not recourse. But the most important thing, that the income from that property was the life-changing deal, basically. That property alone generates between $10,000 to $15,000 a month of passive income after all expenses. So that is, for me, the best deal I ever did because in the end of the day, the cash flow is what gives you the freedom. It's what gives you the ability to live the lifestyle by design that I always wanted.
So what are your thoughts on the current state of the multifamily market? Are there any like trends or shifts that you're paying attention to?
It's a good question. You know, nobody has a crystal ball, really. I'm not trying to be like one of those that knows exactly what's going on. I think there are pockets of different markets that do better than others in today's market. It's a lot to do with the supply and demand and demographic changes. You know, everybody know that Texas is a great growth market and Florida is good as well because people are immigrating into that. But the bottom line is that from after COVID until, let's say, from 2000 until about 2020, sorry, until about 2020, early 2023, we had a very high growth in rent. The rent growth was significant. And that caused a lot of growth in property market. And that also caused an inflation that affected interest rates. You know, the Fed started increasing interest rate, and that kind of slowed the market in kind of the late to mid 2023 to early 2024. That's kind of created a bit of a slower market. I think that 2025 relatively is still a slower market, but we do see, if you like, the early shoots of the green shoots of the recovery is already started, in my opinion. So I think this is a great time to get into the market. We're probably going to see now, especially with President Trump being in charge and having all the tariffs. And generally speaking, he's a real estate investor himself. So he's going to help real estate in general. And it's going to probably push inflation, which will increase rents and increase the values within the next 2 to 3 years. So I think we passed the bottom of the market, but we are in the beginning of the early recovery, provided it's going to continue on that trend. We don't really know. Nobody knows if we're going to have another kind of a black swan event or something that could be out of the blue, shaking the global economy or the local economy in the US. We don't know that. But from a real estate point of view, I think that if you buy well today and you buy asset with enough reserves and enough value add opportunity to increase the rents, I think you'll do well. So I think it's a good time to be investing, cautiously investing as always, But I think from here, the trend will go upwards in the next 2 to 3 years. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I think that's well said. I mean, I think we all agree that in the United States of America in particular, there's still a housing shortage. So the stronger performance of the multifamily market is because of significant demand for the housing market. That's, you know, that continuously shows us those fundamental, you know, signals. So I do expect to see more positive gains in 25. I hope it accelerates in 26 and 27. I think you're exactly correct. You know, with all the tariffs from Canada to Mexico to China, you will see inflation affect many things in the country, from supply chain issues to the cost of consumer goods and whatnot. And there's still something that's not talked about as much, which I happen to bring up in every conversation, which is the credit card debt in this country is enormous. And people have soaked up their entire savings account. There's very little savings. Credit scores have been affected, which makes it more difficult to buy homes. And that's going to add to the fuel and to the fire of the demand in the rental market too. So you're going to have very, very solid demand with tenants that want to be first-time or second-time home purchasers, but maybe they just can't do it yet. So that also adds to the demand and the strong performance of the multifamily. And to your point, rents stabilized a bit. In some states and cities, it's declined, like in Austin, Texas, or in Scottsdale or Phoenix, Arizona. But overall, it's a market-to-market situation, state-to-state, city-to-city, and in some cases, block-by-block. So well said, and we're all hoping that things stabilize and increase a bit going into, you know, 25, 26. So,
yeah.
So where are we in the process, Jen? Are we getting close to possibly discussing our famous game?
Yeah, we are. It is about that time.
Okay.
Before we jump into that, I want to just ask Hadar one more question, and then we're gonna play a game, Hadar. But my last question is, you know, you mentioned in the very beginning that you love the freedom that real estate investing creates. So how has real estate changed your lifestyle over the years?
It gave me much more freedom, ability to spend time with my family, ability to travel the world more, and just being able to have a lifestyle by design. You know, for me, it's really important to have a work and play balance, and the passive income allowed me, and real estate is something that, because I'm using a third-party property management and I'm doing the asset management component of that, that allowed me a lot of freedom. I can work from my computer and I could be anywhere in the world. So I'm very grateful for that.
Awesome. Okay. So here's the game that Robert was alluding to. We have something called our lightning round, and this is where we rapid fire questions at you. And you are supposed to just tell us whatever is the very first thing that comes to mind. So are you ready? You ready to play?
Yeah.
Okay. Robert, do you want to start? Or you want me to start?
Yeah, no, I could start. So you're so well-traveled. What would be the next destination that you would like to travel to personally?
I'm kind of happy where I am at the moment, in general, but if I had to choose a different country which I haven't gone to, it will probably be Japan. I want to go to Japan. It's on my bucket list, and I'm quite keen to go. As you know, Robert, there is I think it's one of the country with the most Michelin star restaurants or something like that, I heard. So I'm sure.
It's so funny. I was talking with my teenage son and my wife the other day at the dinner table. My little son didn't understand what we were talking about, but we all talked about Japan and Portugal in particular. So I'm right there with you. I want to get to Japan as well.
Yes.
Awesome. So if real estate wasn't your first option, what unconventional way would you build wealth?
Well, I don't really know what unconventional exactly means, but I'll probably look into some businesses. Which is probably conventional, but I will probably find an angle to get into an unconventional business and do that. I think I will focus on cash flow, and that's pretty much what I'm thinking at this point. If I had the knowledge that I have right now, I will probably deal with products that are not perishable, and moving goods from one place to another with products which are not perishable and just doing a trading and clipping the coupon, something like that.
Nice.
What is your favorite cuisine as far as food to eat if you only could eat one cuisine for the next 2 weeks?
Wow. I'll probably be happy with Thai cuisine.
Thai, that's a great choice.
Yeah, it's healthy, it's good. Thai cuisine will be, if I can have that for 2 weeks or more, I'll be pretty happy. Indian is one that I like, but Thai cuisine will be a better choice. Less oily.
What's your guilty pleasure after closing a really big deal? What do you like to do?
I like to, a really big deal, I probably like to go on vacation or go to a nice restaurant. That's kind of what I like to do.
Okay. Have you read a book recently that you'd like to share with the audience?
Wow. Okay. I've been reading a lot of different books. I got a wide range of books, but I could recommend from a real estate point of view, you know, the book that Lindsay and Lauren and Marco wrote about attracting capital. I think it's a great book. And I think that anybody who's interested in real estate should read that because it's a really good book about how not to become somebody who's looking to raise money, but somebody who's actually learns from the master experience, Marco, how to attract capital and really not only be able to get into your own deal with that, but also being able to add value to potential other team members that you can join to add value to them and grow your portfolio this way as well.
Great.
What's one real estate myth that drives you crazy every time you hear it?
There are no cash flow producing properties.
That's a good one. That's good.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite sport, being such an international, living internationally, but also knowing America? Do you have a favorite sport? I don't think I've ever asked you that question.
Yeah, my exercise routine is varied. So I do, you know, I like running. My most consistent practice is probably yoga. I like doing yoga a lot because it's something that combines not only mobility, but for me, it's also like an active meditation and it helps with mobility and flexibility. So that's something that I really enjoy. I really enjoy yoga. I think like I get two burns in one hand by working on my mobility, flexibility, that's even free, and having a clear mind while I'm doing it. So I really enjoy that.
That's a good one.
And I've been doing some boxing recently as well. So I used to box when I was younger, and recently I've been doing some boxing, which I back into it now. I quite enjoy that.
Nice. Last question. If your investing style had a theme song, what would it be?
It would be the song that goes like, I'm on vacation because I like my occupation. There is a song like that. I'm on vacation. I like my occupation. Hey, I'm on vacation. Like my occupation.
That's
the song.
Yes. Who is that? Jason Mraz? Yeah. Yeah. I know that song. Good one.
That is awesome.
Yes. That's my theme song. I run in the streets, skipping along, running, singing this song, you know, feel like I'm on vacation because I like my occupation.
I love it.
That's great. Well, Hadar, thank you so much for being a guest. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, and we love your insight and your knowledge about the multifamily space and real estate investing, and it was a great pleasure. So thank you.
Thank you, Hadar.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode with my special guest, Hadar Okibi, and my co-host, Robert Musso. Hope you enjoyed today's show, and until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.